Now, I wonder what Easter is about for you. Thoughts on a postcard, please. Is it to do with the end of Lent, which has seemed particularly long this year, I have to say? Is it about chocolate and its reappearance, if it ever really disappeared, let's be honest? Is it about the Easter garden? Or having the beauty of the flowers back in church, which are glorious, and you may not? Is it to do with hearing the church bells that have pretty well been silent over Lent? Or is it to do with Easter bunnies, or bonnets, I see one or two, or new clothes? I seem to remember having a new white cardigan for church at Easter. It wasn't always a good thing. So thinking about Jesus' friends that first Easter morning, what would they have been going through? We can't really imagine it, can we? Maybe it was some mixture of shock and joy. It's obviously majored, if you like, on joy and amazement initially. And then as they realised that the impossible was true, that new life had come out of death, and it was beautiful and unspoiled, but not entirely unchanged. What might they have felt then? The Gospel reading tells us of Mary as she emerges from darkness. Maybe it was something like that. The last she had seen of Jesus, after all, was his dead body lying in a borrowed tomb. And she now comes out of that dark place, blinking into the sunlight of the early morning.
Daddy had hired me, but
she meets Jesus.
Yeah, except for the clothes. And we had to Easter card in the house. And we also had an Easter card.
She encounters her Lord, who is walking as tall.
Special big egg for
as
us.
As miraculously, very much alive. But this is not anything that she could have imagined in her wildest imaginings. And it throws everything she has ever known into complete chaos. And she is beyond confused. But not, it seems, for terribly long. Because everything then fits together in a miraculous and new way. She recognises him, acknowledges him, and what he has always been and meant to her. And then she does what she is commissioned to do. She goes and tells her friends. Early Christians knew that having that experience was how people became Christians. So over the next couple of hundred years or so, Jesus' people developed a way in which new folk could join and be initiated into their community. It was a way that was faithful to what had happened in their own lives.
And to that first Easter.
Because, of course, in those times, it was still dangerous to become one of Jesus' people. The way they lived and looked after their own was so different from the Roman culture around them, and also from what the Jewish culture had become in reaction to the Roman occupation. So being Christian is dangerous. Their tradition had become to take bread and wine to celebrate together on the first day of the week. But joining them was, for all sorts of reasons, not easy. It was important to keep the faith and you were very likely to put your life, your own life and the lives of your family at risk in doing so. It was illegal, it was risky. We might think of places in the world where that's still true today. But Jesus had commissioned them to do that, so they sought to do it with rigour, with integrity. People who were set on joining were not just allowed to join the initiated faithful in their worship on the first day of the week, when they reenacted the time when Jesus shared his body and his blood with those who loved him, which showed them that their life came from his death. So if you wanted to be a full member of that community rather than a hanger-on, you committed to being sequestered, shut up really, with others who felt the same for 40 days. You had a teacher with you who instructed you in the ways of Jesus' people. You prayed together, you ate together, you shared together, you served together. You did everything together in that community. You learned Jesus' ways, which were to become second nature to you during that time. And that, of course, is where the observance of Lent and the idea of religious communities both came from. And they both became fixed in different ways and in different places over time. At the end of those intense 40 days, you were brought out of a relatively dark place and you were baptized naked by full immersion. So having been completely symbolically both drowned and washed clean, you were brought out of the waters of death and reclothed in new clothes of life. You were then allowed to join the worshipping community in their holy meal, in the light and the rejoicing after that. So it was some considerable undertaking, and we can understand why the discipline of becoming one of Jesus' people in those times was so formative. And this still happens to a degree. Yesterday on Easter Eve, Bishop Reith reenacted some of this in Bath Abbey in the evening. It was wonderful. It was heartwarming. It was inspiring. It was very moving. A dear friend of mine was confirmed. I have not so much walked with her but sort of potted encouragingly alongside as seemed appropriate over the last few years. Her parents were not able to be there for health reasons. So it was a complete privilege to know and to witness, really, that people's lives are still being turned upside down, inside out, put together and made new in extraordinary and generous ways now, some 2,000 odd years later. And while these things still happen, there is hope for each one of us, for the world and the future, even in such times as these. As some of us are probably too aware, we none of us have any idea how our futures will unfold, even when we think we have, let alone the future of our communities or of the world. But as Christ's people, we are commissioned to live in love and hope and peace, and to do so keeping the path of faith which Jesus taught us by walking in it, by being people of the way. So we just have a moment of quiet now to spend in God's presence, in thankfulness and in joy this Easter morning. Hallelujah, hallelujah.